here, and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. You know who you are. Good morning, lurking conservatives. Thank you for the support. I'm actually getting support from conservatives. Good morning, Mark Riley, who's probably still in bed. He's on vacation, but apparently he didn't go anywhere because I saw him hanging around yesterday. But I hope he's having a nice time. He'll be back on Monday. Good morning to all of you out there who are angry, who are disgruntled, who feel like the world is not working out for you. Let's try and make it a little better, man. I tell you, the other day we were talking about Christmas and about Hanukkah, and I don't know if I was misunderstood, but apparently anything I say about religion ever can be misconstrued by religious people as being anti-religious. Do what you want. I have no problem with your religion, really. I don't care a whole lot, honestly. I hope that you have a good holiday season. This is one I got from somebody who was offended. I listen to Morning Sedition most mornings, and I usually enjoy the program. So you get a little twist of guilt right there in the first sentence. It's a powerful opening because it doesn't just slam you over the head with the, you know, I don't like you. But usually I enjoy the program. But today, let me just add a sentence. I was disappointed. Disappointed. There's nothing worse than a disappointing person. Because you know what? As this is a person who, as a Christian, was upset, and I'll get into the bulk of the email in a minute, was upset with my talk about Christmas the other day, yet knows well enough to play on those inherently Jewish guilt strings. So I enjoy the program. It's made its impact on me. Just the tone of disappointment, and already I'm like, I've done something awful. How come my mom doesn't like me? But that's my thing. That's my own problem. But let's get into the bulk of the email. I found this morning's show very disturbing. I took most of what I heard personally, and I found it very hurtful. See, now, not only was he usually likes the show, so he's disappointed. Now, I've personally hurt him, that he was sitting in his car going, ow, ow, and maybe shedding a few little tears. But look, I think that has become very easy for people to say disparaging things about Christmas. It is a religious holiday for many of us, and I found most of M. Marin's comments disrespectful. I would like to point out that I am hurt that he spelt my name M-A-R-E-N. I'm a little disappointed and hurt that he didn't take the extra. But anyways, I am your basic Northeast liberal, and I found most of what he said today offensive. I have to admit I did shut it off after several minutes. I'm not giving up on the show, at least not yet. Well, look, let me reach out. Okay, let me reach out to you and say, in all my heart, I want you to have a happy holiday season. I want you to have a very Merry Christmas, and I mean that. And I want you to do, you know, everything that you do that makes you feel good about Christmas and embrace it. And I want to take nothing away from the myth that you believe in. And I want you to know that I believe this with all my heart. I think there's just too much hate in the world for people to be, hateful at this time of year. You know, even if it means being disappointed in me. Like, I felt a little pain from coming off from you here. I was trying to assess Christmas and the holiday season just as a secular person who was not that committed to it, but enjoys having time off and buying things. And I even like, you know, I like tinsel. I like that. I like shiny stuff. The green and red bells hanging on things in stores, I enjoy that. I find that, for the most part, Christian symbology and iconography is a little more compelling than the Jewish stuff that I grew up with. And even in Jerusalem, can I kiss a little more of the butt here? Look, when I went to Jerusalem, I found most compelling the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is where they laid Christ out and anointed him with oils. Because there's a slab there that you can see where Christ was laid out, and they anointed him and embalmed him. Did you know that? And I found that fascinating. And people, Christians from around the world, come and rub their keychains on it and T-shirts and stuff to give it that Christ mojo. And I found that much more compelling than a lot of the Jewish sites. And I found the Dome of the Rock, which is the third holy shrine of Islam, very, very compelling and interesting. I think that some of the Jewish architecture and stuff is a little blocky. So, you know, you go into any synagogue and there's the Chagall prints, you know, and the Agam prints and, you know, the tacky kind of.
Yeah.
All right. But look.
I don't think you're helping, Mark.
I'm not?
You already put your Heeb stink all over it.
What do you mean? Wait.
Everything, anything you said. Because yesterday you didn't say anything offensive.
I know. You said
everyone should celebrate Christmas, including Jews. You didn't say celebrate. You said should use it as a secular tradition, cultural.
It's a cultural thing. Right? It was based around the Christmas tree.
So if this guy took offense to that, it's obviously he's taking offense to the fact that it came out of your Jew mouth.
Yeah, I know. I like your sensitivity in approaching the topic. But all right, you dumb Mick. All right, well, we're going to be talking about your Catholic God in just a second. But Brendan, of course, a student of theology, and you can tell by the way he speaks with the intelligence and the assault on my Jew self. But listen, here's another email. Hi, Mark. I'm an observant Jew, and I actually do not get something meaningful. I actually do get something meaningful from Hanukkah, and they spell it with the chich. But not from the commercialization and the presents. I like recalling past miracles, and I love the candles, the latkes, the gelt, the dreidels. I don't mind people in stores saying Merry Christmas to me, but I didn't like getting Christmas cards, messages, presents from people who know that it's not my holiday. If they want to include me when they know I am not Christian, doesn't that somehow cheapen it for real Christians? Better they should say Happy Holidays or nothing at all. For me, the part that's difficult is the sheer amount of Christmas music on the radio all the time. That's from Betsy. Yeah, I agree with you. The Christmas music is annoying, and holiday cards that aren't religious specific are annoying. But, you know, I thought I don't like dreidels, and I felt that when I was growing up that they were sort of pressing something on us. Even with the song, you know, dreidel, 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 I made it out of clay. It's a dumb game. It's not very fun, and I didn't know what the words meant. And you win what, chocolate coins? I do like latkes. I'm rambling, man. This is bad, and I'm rambling about the wrong thing, man. This is the wrong thing to be opening with. I got to be honest with you. I choose not to believe in God. I choose to go through life filled with panic, need, and fear, and complete anxiety at every waking moment, and not to mention the dread, because honestly, I think that's more realistic. I'm being objective here. If I want to buffer it with something, I choose maybe a donut or ice cream, perhaps some autoeroticism, maybe coffee. I move it around. That's just the way I am. Maybe I'm moving towards some spiritual enlightenment, and all I know is that there's so much going on in the world. So much going on in the world right now. You know, politically, we're seeing the GOP crumble, which is very exciting. There's a horrendous war going on. People going through a lot of pain, economic difficulties. And I feel selfish in the fact that the thing I'm dreading the most is moving my wild cats. Is that, how selfish and stupid is that? I have to tell my listeners that this has come full circle, and I am rambling. It has come full circle, but I'm paid to ramble. It has come full circle. That at the beginning of our show, I was obsessed with these wild cats I brought into my house. And yesterday I had to bring them to the vet. And I got news for you. They're still wild. I've got scars. It was like cornering mongooses. And literally, I wanted to kill one of them. But I didn't, because a vegan wrote me a letter yesterday making me feel completely guilty. Someone accused me of not being a cat person early on. And I live by cat people. My neighbor's a cat person, and he was taking his cat to the vet yesterday at the same time I was. And I'm not a cat person. But I did save these animals, and we have a belligerent love and respect for each other. But yesterday I found that we are still really not close on a deep level. And I think this might be because of my lack of spirituality. This is what I'm getting at. Hey, we're going to talk about Iraq in a minute. It's morning's edition. Riley's out till Monday. We've got about 13 shows left. I'll just say this. If God doesn't love you, I do. 14 past, Air America Radio's morning's edition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the f*** up for 10 seconds?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. It's Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Mark Riley is out for the week. This is hilarious. I don't know if you're just tuning in, but you missed something that just came out of my head. I can't even be clear what it is, but I get one email. This is hilarious. One email here. I realize the show is ending, but Maron is losing it on the air, and his religious ramblings will be a major turnoff to listeners for the next 2 weeks. Then I get another email right after it. Mark, that was a brilliant opening segment. This is the dichotomy. You know, I got an email, some hate mail today, you know, celebrating the fact that I was going to be taken off the air because, assuming that it was because I was anti-religion, which I'm really not. I don't know why people misunderstand that. And his defense was, don't you know that 86% of people in this country believe in a deity? Well, that's fine. So what is the point that I should be bullied out by that? I mean, I'm not saying there isn't one, but I'm not saying there is one either. I'm saying, like, you know, can I be a little confused? Can I be a little, you know what? There probably isn't, but you know, maybe as I get older, I'll think something differently. But that is the dichotomy I'm always dealing with. I'm not losing it. I hate to disappoint you. I've never been more sane in my life. So let's talk about Iraq. It's been a while since we've seen videotaped hostage situations in Iraq. Unfortunately, folks, they're back. Al Jazeera broadcasted a disturbing video of four hostages, all of them men, sitting beside two crossed black swords and some Arabic writing. These are the symbols and name of an organization calling itself the Swords of Righteousness Brigade. Okay, this is a new terror organization, or at least an organization that has never been public before. The hostages are all members of the aid group called Christian Peacemaker Teams. The hostage takers are claiming that the peace activists were spies, and the Christian Peacemaker Teams has confirmed the hostages are members, but has only released the identity of one, a Norman Kember, a British citizen whose passport also appears in the video. A statement from the group said, the four men were there working on behalf of Iraqi civilians. Apparently, this group has had a presence in Iraq since about October 2002. They work with U.S. and Iraqi detainees. They document detainee abuses and refer Iraqis to human rights organizations. They also support Iraqis with their presence when they meet with U.S. troops or Iraqi government officials. This is a group doing good work. The group has even issued a statement saying, this kind of blew my mind, the statement that the Christian Peacemaker Teams has issued says, quote, it does not advocate the use of violent force to save our lives should we be kidnapped, held hostage, or caught in the middle of a conflict situation, end quote. Now, this is a group of Christians that are actually practicing real Christianity and doing something noble in the world, as opposed to fostering contempt and difference and projecting their morality onto other people that you see so much in this country. But I respect this, and I'm sorry that these people have been taken hostage. My concern is, the element that troubles me is that this organization that calls itself the Swords of Righteousness Brigade, it strikes me that they could be Shias. They could be the dominant the party there in Iraq that we're supporting, because it seems to me that a Christian organization that would be dealing with Iraqi detainees and abuse would be dealing primarily with Sunnis who are being either abused or tortured by some of the militias within the police in Iraq or else U.S. sanctioned Iraqi national security forces torture. And it just doesn't quite add up that these are the same type of insurgents that we've been seeing in the sense that they were Sunnis or jihadists. It just doesn't feel quite right to me. I might be wrong. Insurgents have kidnapped more than 225 people since the beginning of the war. At least 38 of them have been killed. There was also a German archaeologist has been kidnapped in Iraq as well. The hostages that I just spoke to you about, who were kidnapped by the Swords of Righteousness Brigade, two of them, one is an American, one is from Britain, who I just told you about, Norman Kember, and there are two Canadians. Some other Iraq updates. Two American soldiers were killed by a roadside bomb north of Baghdad yesterday. A Sunni cleric was assassinated as he left a mosque in Fallujah. Six Iranian pilgrims were seized near a Shiite religious shrine north of Baghdad. Right now, as of today, American casualties are at 2,110 Americans have been killed. And tonight, our president is going to pitch the war to an American public that has clearly had enough, folks. He will be selling his snake oil at the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland. There won't be much dissent there, I'll tell you that, at least not dissent out loud. But a recent Gallup poll found that 63% of those surveyed disapproved of Bush's handling of the war, and 60% thought it was not worth going to war. Now, this blows my mind that he's going to get up there and try to pitch you know, what is an evolving rationalization for this war. According to the White House, the speech will focus on efforts to train Iraqi forces to take over for the 155,000 U.S. troops that are now in Iraq. All right, Bush is going to claim that he has a strategy, that he wants the American people to understand, that he has a plan. He will disperse. Here's what he'll do, and I think this is my own speculation, that I think he is going to disperse the responsibility to make it look like he has a strategy. He'll say things like, Iraqis are well on their way to fighting for themselves. We're putting $3.9 billion into training the Iraqi security forces, police force. We're buying them new uniforms. And then he's going to talk about how he's not going to make any real decisions. He's going to listen to the commanders on the ground who are going to make the decisions. But these are going to be commanders that only he is going to believe. Because I'll tell you, a lot of the military people we talked to, a lot of the press that we've talked to said that this war is militarily unwinnable. So what they're going to have to do is start to dissolve all of their original planning and why they went to war. Obviously, for American, you know, for the safety of this country, for weapons of mass destruction, that all goes out the window. Now it's just a sort of rationalization or a sort of makeshift plan to oversee what is seeming like, you know, police death squads, a lot of violence, a civil war that is unstoppable. But he's going to present it like it's exactly what he wants to happen. He's going to say things like, I will base my decisions on the recommendations of commanders. Well, some commanders are saying that we're screwed there, and the ones that he will take, not unlike intelligence that he took from the CIA, not unlike anything that he operates with, is whatever fits his delusion, whatever fits the reality that George W. Bush is living in. It doesn't necessarily need to be true. Usually it isn't. He's also going to say he will not make decisions based on politics, but he is hoping that everything will coincide with his political decision. He will say things like, we won't set an arbitrary timetable. Then he'll talk about how he'll wait for the Iraqis to request redeployment, as if he doesn't have any sway with them. The bottom line is, the Pentagon has plans to pull some 17,000 troops out shortly after the Iraqi elections in December, then another 38,000 in mid-2006. That's midterm 2006. Then, of course, he's going to pound the theme that this is going to be the way. We're going to win the war on terror. Now, bottom line, Iraq is now a terror headquarters. There is no end to a war on terror, especially if you're training them. The only forces that are being trained effectively in Iraq are insurgents and terrorists, and they're being trained against our soldiers. They are killing our soldiers. That is the training we're providing for them. And people like al-Zarqawi are dispatching suicide bombers to other countries. The whole idea that Bush can win a war on terror by maintaining troops in Iraq is complete crap, number one, and he's doing nothing but fomenting terrorism internationally. So I think he's trying to guarantee that this war never ends. I think that's what they really want, the neocon death cult. What about Joe Lieberman? What about that guy? Man, he was kissing some Bush. All right, 27 past. We'll talk about that in a minute. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here. It's Morning Sedition. It's Air America Radio. It's Morning Sedition and its last 13, I guess, episodes. December 16th, end time for Morning Sedition. Hopefully, moving on to L.A. to get a syndicated show out of Air America's outlet there. We'll see what happens. Mark Riley's on vacation this week. He'll be here for the last 2 weeks of the show. We're taking requests for favorite bits. A lot of them are coming in. So people were reminding me of bits that I forgot that I liked. Just got a letter here, an email. I've been going through the emails because I'm enjoying the connection with you folks out there these last few weeks. I always do, but I don't always read them on the air. This is from an ordained pastor in Montgomery, Alabama. Says, I've never felt offended by any of Mark's comments on religion. I listen to Morning Sedition most mornings. He goes on to talk about Cornel West's book, Democracy Matters, and the comparison between Christianity and Constantinian Christianity. And he says in his email, whereas prophetic Christianity seeks to promote the things that many of the prophets and Jesus advocated, love of humans, peace, justice, etc. I have never heard Mark denigrate these things, which are the essence of the true Christian faith. On this contrary, Mark is working towards some same ends as Christians who care about these most important objectives. Let's see, now, I'm not tooting my own horn, but that seems reasonable to me. I'm certainly not going to argue with the tenets of Christianity that are actually embracing, helpful, iconoclastic in that they stand up for the little guy. These are liberal principles. I'm not going to deny that, and I appreciate the email. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. Man, that was so loud in my headphones. I don't even know why. All right, Canadian government. This is from the Associated Press. Canadian government falls in no confidence vote. Canadian government falls in no confidence vote. Translation, Canucks to leaders. Can't trust you, eh? Come on. How could that, the A's, that's been determined as funny. It's a funny archetype. From The Guardian, Bush trying to help Republican candidates. Bush trying to help Republican candidates. Translation, president to vanish until 2007. From Newsday, rally held in Texas to support Tom DeLay. Rally held in Texas to support Tom DeLay. Translation, Klan holds hoodless rally. There you go. There, you know, that's going to make the people in Texas happy. Look at this. So I was talking about the Bush speech at the Naval Academy in Annapolis. That happens this morning, not tonight, this morning. But you got to understand, people, on the hours that I'm at, you know, noon is nighttime. Also, I forgot to tell you that, I did say it, he's going to lean a lot on the training of the Iraqi forces. The latest number of professed Iraqi security forces trained and equipped, this is from the Pentagon, people, 212,000. Including infantry, commandos, special police battalions, and a variety of military support units. That means everybody they could count. That dude looks like he's got a military hat on. Count him. Approximately 130 Iraqi army and special police battalions are fighting the insurgency. This is from the Pentagon. Of the 130, about 45 battalions are rated as, quote, in the lead, unquote. That's from the Pentagon. In September, U.S. commanders testified to Congress that the number of Iraqi battalions rated at the highest level of readiness had dropped from 3 to 1. Now, an Iraqi battalion usually numbers about 700 to 800 people. One. This is in September. One battalion. One. 700 to 800 soldiers. How, in the last 2 months, did we get to 212,000 ready fighters? U.S. officials say the Iraqis don't need to reach that top level before they are competent enough to take over for the U.S. You see what they're doing here? They're just trying to frame this into a political framework that they can use to try to get support again from their own people. It's ridiculous. And what else? You know what else is ridiculous? This guy, Joe Lieberman, is on board with Bush's non-existent strategy. Joe Lieberman pops off the plane from a recent trip to Iraq, his fourth in 17 months, literally peeing himself about what he calls progress there. All right? Really. From all indications, at least from our sources like Mick Ware yesterday, who said, can we hear a little bit of that?
I and some other generals had lunch with Senator Joe Lieberman the other day, and we listened to him talking about Iraq. Either Senator Lieberman is so divorced from reality that he's completely lost the plot, or he knows he's spinning a line. Because one of my colleagues turned to me in the middle of this lunch and said, he's not talking about any country I've ever been to. And yet he was talking about Iraq, the very country where we were sitting.
That is Mick Ware, Time Magazine's Baghdad bureau chief, a regular guest on our show, talking about Joe Lieberman, who literally was so excited he was wetting himself yesterday when he was talking. Look, from all indications, Iraq is a disaster in most ways. And that's just the reality. This is not some sort of spin. I mean, there may be good things going on there. There may be schools being built. Someone might have put a pipe in. You know, there might be electricity for another hour than it usually has. But still, it's dismal. The violence is worse than it's been in months. Hostages were just taken. You know, there aren't enough trained Iraqi troops to do much of anything on their own. There seems to be some renegade militias within the police force that are doing some fairly, you know, nasty things. But Lieberman wants the world to know that what he saw, what he thought to be, that he was excited. He saw what he thought to be millions of people with cell phones and hundreds of satellite dishes on roofs. So things must be getting better. He didn't mention that the water or the electricity or jobs or food or how much trouble people are having. But they got cell phones in there. Look, they can watch Seinfeld reruns on the and get Nick at Night. They can get that. That was progress to Joe Lieberman, all right? And also he thought it was very exciting that he saw a few campaign signs for upcoming Iraqi elections. And look, Lieberman just got off that plane and just firmly affixed his face to Bush's behind. That's what happened. Here's the quote of the day from Lieberman. Quote, there are more cars on the street and an amazing number of satellite dishes on rooftops and what seems like millions of cell phones. Most exciting is the political stuff. There is a campaign going on there for the December 15th National Assembly elections, and there are a lot of independent television stations and newspapers covering it. Sounds great, Al. Why don't you join Team Delusion with your president and stop calling yourself a Democrat? How would that be? The bottom line is that many of those newspapers that he's talking about are being used by the military to disperse articles written by military operatives to put out a positive spin on the American presence in Iraq. They are part of a psychops initiative to win the hearts and minds of the Iraqis. Now, this is standard warfare stuff, but let's call it what it is. The Pentagon has contract with a firm called the Lincoln Group that actually facilitates the placement of one-sided pro-American news into Iraqi news outlets. The company translates the propaganda into Arabic and buys off editors to run the stories that may be true, but severely one-sided. And then you got Donald Rumsfeld, who's paying lip service to the fact that the independent press and proliferation of many newspapers are the great examples of a new democracy encouraging debate and conversation. How can they not think word wouldn't get out in Iraq that this stuff is going on? I mean, the power of the press. I mean, the bottom line is you can't deny that. I mean, if I read a story that seems to have no bearing on reality, my first thought is not this story is BS, but it's usually, wow, am I out of the loop? And then I got to go, oh, wait, this is BS. But it takes me a couple minutes. Let's get into this real quick, and then I want to talk to you people. In a commentary released in the Vatican newspaper yesterday as an accompaniment to the official release of the papal document that restricts the access of homosexual men to the Roman Catholic priesthood, these assertions were made. I'm going to quote this commentary written by a priest, obviously. Quote, homosexuality does not represent a social value and even less so a moral virtue that could add to the civilization of sexuality. It could even be seen as a destabilizing reality for people and for society, end quote. Here's another quote from a piece in the Vatican newspaper by a priest. Quote, in no case is this form of sexuality a sexual alternative or even less a reality that is equivalent to that which is shared by a man and a woman engaged in matrimonial life, end quote. Quote, homosexuality is a sexual tendency and not an identity. It is an incomplete and immature part of human sexuality, end quote. This is in the Vatican newspaper. It basically says homosexuality is not considered an acceptable moral alternative to heterosexuality and that it's dangerous to society and that it destabilizes it. It makes homosexuality like lower than sludge. The piece also reiterated the church's stand against gay marriage and adoption. Now, what I want to know, if you're gay or you've got a family member who is gay or you don't mind gay people and you're a practicing Catholic, how the hell are you? How are you doing it? How do you still do that? How do you still practice Catholicism and face those people in your life or face yourself if you're gay? Now, I am trying to be critical here and I am trying to reach out because I would like an explanation. I know, you know, there's an idea that you take what you want and you leave the rest, or you take what you need and leave the rest, and some of these things are ingrained deeply within people. These are your core values, which are Catholic. But how do you reconcile that within yourself or within your family if you want to love yourself or love the members of your family or your friends that are homosexuals and respect them and still go into that church every Sunday? I want to know. 866-303-2270 is the number, 866-303-2270. It's 44 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition. It's Air America Radio.
This is Wayne Gilman, better known to the hard body mamas of the greater New York metropolitan area as Newsday. When I'm not busting a cap in some jive cat's ass for hogging the printer when I'm on deadline, I'm having a funky good time with Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Ooh, Newsday.
Well, look who's awake. Ready for another taste of Wayne?
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
49 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Mark Riley's on vacation for the week. We'll be back. He'll be back Monday. I'm here. We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270, talking to Catholics, friends of Catholics, Catholics who are gay, Catholics who have gay members in their family, Catholics who have somehow managed to continue going to church after this horrendous article comes out, and just making homosexuality the worse than the worst. Like, it's the worst thing in the world societally in every way. And how do you live with yourself, and how do you still go to Catholic Church? Now, I don't want anyone to call me and say homosexuality is wrong. It says that in the Bible. You know, we're not talking about that. I'm not talking about biblical morality. Homosexuality is not wrong. It may make you uncomfortable because it scares you, because it's different, or you may think it's wrong because your biblical values are so deeply ingrained in you, and I understand that as well. But who I want to talk to is, how do you go to church with gay members of your family and still have love for them and go to this place that dispels this hate? But before we do that, let me just take this quick call from Ted in Nebraska.
Hi, Mark. Once again, the left is completely misguided when it comes to this immigration issue. It's naive. You have no real sense of history.
Oh, no, it's happening. Oh, no, I hate when this... help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no, it's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
Help, Pennsylvania.
Live from Radio Halliburton, it's Right and Early, the conservatives' way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocon. It's 34 past the hour here on Radio Halliburton. Building a secret prison? Give Halliburton a call. Mum's the word. Hey, W's getting tough on those illegal immigrants. It's about time, too. Pack up your leaf blower and vamoose, Pablo. America's closed. Yeah, that's right. Pile into the flatbed and beat it, Los Lonely Boys. Leave the dishes. We'll pay an American to do them. All right. Yeah. Let's take some calls. You're on the air, caller. In English, por favor.
Yes, Mark the Shark. As a fifth-generation Mexican-American, I find your stereotypes to be highly offensive.
Oh, sí. Mark the Shark is a bad hombre. All right.
Hey, yeah. Look, what? I'm the CEO of a large biotech company in Chicago.
Oh, CEO, sí. Maybe you need some tequila.
You're on the air, caller.
Yeah, Mark the Shark. What would you do, man, if you found an illegal Mexican on your lawn?
You mean without hedge trimmers? Good question, caller. I've given this a lot of thought. I'd say, excuse me, sir, do you realize that your presence here lowers the aggregate wages of native-born Americans and dilutes what was once the finest living standard in the world?
Okay, man. Then what?
Then I'd have it translated into something he can understand! Dance, Paco! Dance! Whoa, I think you dropped a chalupa, Enrique. Somebody clean that up. Somebody American. You're on the air, caller.
Yeah, Mark the Shark. Isn't the unfettered flow of labor one of the cornerstones of a free market economy?
Isn't one of the cornerstones of a free market economy the fact that I'm a big dumb loser who's too politically correct to offend the flood of illegals ruining this great country?
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
Okay. You got any pot?
Sorry, stoner. Borders closed. Suck on this, Mescalito. All right. There you go. Stick around, neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Don't touch that dial, Patriot. We'll be back with Right and Early.
Oh, man, I'm drooling. What the hell? Why didn't somebody come in here and help me with that? I have that weird mental problem. All right, let's shift gears. We're going to be talking now to Catholics. We're going to be talking to Catholics who know that the Vatican has just released some commentary on its newspaper saying that homosexuals are basically lower than the low. They're a danger to society. They're reprehensible. They are, are never going to be legitimate in terms of their relationship compared to heterosexual relations. I just want to know if you have a gay member in your family or you're gay, how you can still go to that church. Barbara in Washington. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I won't be attending anymore
they're on a Salem witch hunt. This follows 3 months ago an edict that priests can still be priests if they're gay, as long as they don't, as long as they're celibate.
Right.
And then this comes out.
Right. This is the new one that says they can't. There's no gays at all allowed.
Well, let's eliminate everybody that's gay from the Catholic population, and let's see how fast the churches clear out.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for your call, Barbara. I've always believed that a lot of the children who were whose parents were frightened that they were gay. This was back during the 20s and 30s. I think it's, I don't know when it started, but they were sort of moved towards the priesthood out of fear that they would become gay. Mary in Long Island, how are you?
Morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Yeah, I'm sorry about the show. I'm really going to miss the show. I've been emailing, but I don't know. I just didn't do any good.
No, you know, a lot of people listened, and, you know, hopefully they'll set me up somewhere else. It's not going to be the same, but I certainly appreciate your support. But all the people that you email, it certainly made an impact, so don't think that.
Good, I hope so. I've been a Catholic. I was raised a Catholic. Uh-huh. One went through the sacraments and the whole bit. And I know the church, and I'm many decades, and I'm out of the church since I was 18, when I started to come into this awareness that the church's position hasn't changed on anything. That's the whole point of the church. It's not a democracy.
Right.
There's no voting. There's no nothing.
And right.
What the Pope says goes, he's supposedly divinely inspired or whatever. None of it agrees with any of my basic philosophies. I've found spiritual teachings. I haven't really, you know, left that sense of God. But the point is that the church and I are part. How can anybody be a practicing Catholic today? They're not allowed to practice birth control. I don't know if you understand this. I mean, forget about abortions, divorce, all that stuff is, quote, illegal in the Catholic Church.
Do you still go to church?
No.
No, oh, good.
Not Catholic. I can't. How can you?
I cannot
receive the sacraments. You cannot take Holy Communion if you are in sin. So what do they do? Go to confession, and then they're cleared, and they go out, and they
do whatever they want, kill people.
Yeah. I don't understand. They go to church. I'm sorry if I'm offending anyone who's Catholic and goes to church, but either you are or you aren't.
Yeah,
this
thank you.
This is the way it was presented to me.
Yeah.
And I don't see how it's changed.
Well, thank you very much, Mary. I you know, not being brought up a Catholic myself, you know, obviously it hasn't changed much. It seems to be getting more extreme in these times where that type of conservatism, that type of sort of, you know, holding by these standards that don't function for people is so non-tolerant. It's so non-embracing. It so disregards people who may want to engage in the spirituality that Catholicism provides, but feel completely marginalized, even hated. I just don't understand how this is a practical spirituality for anybody. And this goes to any religion that is extreme. I mean, I thought the idea of religion was to create a sort of a charitable, just, intolerant base of, I don't guess you would call them, of constituents, of followers, to make the world a better place, not to put wedges between everybody. 57 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We'll be back. Rick Overton's going to be here. And Todd Berry, the comedian and friend of mine.
You know, Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It's 6 past the hour, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. I'm alone today. I got my friends in the booth. I got Kalo and P.W. McDonald and Little Goliath and Boy Genius, John Crimmings, and I see Jim Earl, Kent Jones lurking around. But Mark Riley is at home, in bed, probably listening. Probably listening. What's up, Riley? You all right? You having a good time? Laying there in bed while I'm doing the big work here and the last of our 13 shows. You're going to be back Monday. Riley will be back Monday to help me out with the last 2 weeks of Morning Sedition. And then Riley will remain, my friends, from 5 to 7 here on Air America. And Rachel Maddow will be taking the 7 to 9 slot in what they're calling Air America Mornings. I will be in Los Angeles, up in the hills, growing a beard and long hair, ranting to the wind, and hopefully they will put that on the air. Me ranting to the wind in my garage / office on an ISDN line, shouting, screaming for attention and justice. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Hey, if you're just tuning in, here's a little something. Here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's morning's edition Cliff Notes. After returning from Iraq, Democratic Senator Joe Lieberman praised U.S. strategy there and urged President Bush to update the American people on progress being made. Lieberman, who spent Wednesday and Thursday in Iraq, said he saw strong evidence that a plan is in place. Unfortunately, that plan is to fool idiots like Lieberman whenever they're in Iraq on Wednesdays and Thursdays. Lieberman had little time to defend his comments. The Bush administration has asked him to tour and report back from devastated areas of New Orleans. Because he's an apologist, Bush. All right. The Vatican newspaper said yesterday that homosexuality destabilizes individuals and society. Unfortunately, the Vatican's message was somewhat mitigated because it was delivered by men dressed in glittering robes that RuPaul would regard as overly flamboyant. The paper insisted that his homosexuality had no redeeming value, an attitude which would explain the large number of bad haircuts among the Catholic hierarchy. Yeah, it's kind of like a stereotyping joke. Probably not going to make some people happy. But, you know, there are some gay hairdressers. That's all. That's enough said. You know, it's not everybody. The Vatican newspaper says homosexuality could never match the importance of the relationship between a man and a woman, especially a 12-year-old man whose mother catches him with a copy of Hustler and forces him into the priesthood. A new study shows that people perceive a businesswoman in a sexy attire as less competent, although the same clothes do not affect their opinion of a receptionist. Upon hearing of the study, marketers of Victoria's Secret put on hold plans for the crotchless power suit, the boardroom bustier, and the line of high heels called Promote Me Pumps. That's our Cliff Notes. You know, you know what? We've got a woman in Minnesota who's a diehard fan of Morning Sedition. She's in the hospital. They don't have a radio she can listen to. So for the second day in a row, she has called our studio line just to be put on hold and listen to the show. She's had both her knees operated on, and I'd like to say hello. Good morning, Jenna. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
Good. Is everything all right? How do you feel today? Yeah. You good?
I'm pretty happy, yeah. I thought you weren't going to mention me because, you know, you went through, you said you're alone today, you know, you don't have Riley, and I wanted to say, but Mark, you're me.
Well, you're going to be my co-host. You ready to go to some news?
I'm ready to go, yeah. This will be the Jenna Watch. I'll give you all my commentary.
Maybe we'll check back with you. Have you had your OxyContin for breakfast yet?
Oh, I did. I did.
No kidding.
I discovered something new, Visceral.
Visceral? Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you know,
I didn't know that one.
Well, I got to tell you something. When you leave the hospital, you're only supposed to take those for a couple weeks. I just want to tell you that now. I don't want to ruin the parade. I don't want to ruin the fun. I know you're enjoying yourself.
Yeah.
How are you?
I guess I'll cross that bridge when I come to it.
Exactly, Jenna. So how are your knees? Are they okay? You in a lot of pain? I guess not.
They're not so great, no. They're kind of swollen.
Is it still snowing there?
Well, it's dark.
Oh, it's still dark.
I don't know.
Well, enjoy your buzz.
It's 6 o'clock in the morning, but boy, you just scored with me because you did remember to mention me.
I'm glad. Well, you enjoy the rest of the show. I'll check back in with you later.
All right, thanks.
Okay, Jenna. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court will consider arguments in a New Hampshire law that requires parental notification before a minor has an abortion. It will decide whether to reinstate the law that requires the notification of parents 48 hours before the operation can take place on a woman under 18. Now, this is in 2003, this law was struck down just moments before it went into effect because it didn't provide an exception to protect the minor's health. The law at hand states that parents or guardians must be notified either in person or by certified mail, and the law does have a provision that allows a minor to go to a judge instead of a parent, and some people think that protects the minor somehow, to have a judge who's going to side with the parent be a doctor in some cases. So the two sides are pretty clear. One is that some feel that a parent has the right to know whether the child is having an abortion no matter what. They also see the judge provision as protecting the minor's safety, as I said. The other side feels that in many cases, the parents are the last people that should know whether their child is having an abortion, and that notification process could delay what might be an emergency situation or a very timely one. They say it also puts the judge, as I said before, into a situation where they have to act make medical decisions. Look, it seems to me... See, this is this issue is always very provocative because, not unlike, you know, abortion is not an easy thing. It's not an easy reality. It's not something that anybody, you know, chooses to, not something they're gunning for or says, yay, I'm going to have this. But it is necessary in some situations, and it should remain safe when it is necessary, because it is one of those medical procedures that, if not available, it will put people's lives in danger, because they will do it no matter what. This has been proven throughout the history of the world, certainly in modern America. If safe abortions are not accessible, people will hurt themselves. Women will hurt themselves to perform these operations. And it seems to me, on a bottom line, in terms of parents, if you're close with your parents, if you have a trusting relationship with your parents, and they understand you, to have a conversation with them about it, you know, you would do that if you could trust their guidance. If you can't, you probably have good reason to not trust their guidance, and you would like to make that decision on your own. But I do think that if you are a woman who is a minor, this is just my opinion, I guess, is what I'm giving here, if you should consult with somebody. That it should not be a law that you have to notify your parents. It shouldn't be a law, but there should be support for minors who are considering making this decision from people without an agenda and from people who understand, i.e. medical professionals at clinics that provide safe abortions and educate both sides of the situation. This ruling is going to be very interesting, because Bush has not fully stacked the court yet. The timing's a little off. He doesn't have Alito in there. He's got Roberts in there, but O'Connor's still in there. And this thing is not timed out properly for the president to have everything he wants on that Supreme Court. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what comes out of this. The last major abortion decision in the Supreme Court was made in 2000. It ruled that state abortion laws must provide an exception to protect the minor's health in case her parents don't agree. They decided to hear this New Hampshire argument last May. So I'm interested to hear how this falls, because if Alito was on the court, certainly, you know, you have to understand, if they overturn, you know, Roe v. Wade, I mean, right now, 15 states have unconstitutional and unenforceable criminal bans that would outlaw abortion throughout pregnancy. Now, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, you know, Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Colorado, Delaware, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Missouri, Minnesota, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Utah, Vermont, West Virginia, Wisconsin, these states could and possibly would ban abortion altogether. It's baffling to me. There are some states that have maybe one or two abortion clinics in the entire state, like Mississippi. And this means that women, if they want to terminate their pregnancy safely, for their own reasons, might have to go to another state, might not make it to another state, might not have the financial or job or work time off to get this stuff done. There are a lot of kids that are had that are not wanted. The adoption idea is a good idea. It's just not always practical. And the bottom line is, we're talking about a small ganglia, a wad of cells. We're not talking about a developed child. It's 15 past the hour. When we come back, look, folks, our most hated guest that we've ever had on is coming back, because hate sometimes is entertaining. Todd Brad, policy analyst, will be with us. It's 15 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hi, this is Mark Maron's mom, and you're listening to my son and his friend Mark Riley. They're very good boys. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Are you happy? Are you happy? Are you? Are you happy? That's what my mother always asks me. Are you happy? Are you happy? Shut up! I'm all right. Are you happy? I'm okay. Now I'm irritated. 20 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. Mark Riley will be back on Monday. He's on vacation, relaxing in bed. So I'm sure tuning in, wondering, like, what's it sound like without me? Hey, what it?
Radio!
Oops, that's the wrong yeah. I wanted a Riley yeah. Damn. That was, what's his name? What's that guy's name? Little John. Isn't there a Riley on here?
All right.
That's I think weird. We might have taken it off.
Oh, that's too bad.
I kind of embarrassed him, I think. Sorry.
You did, with the Riley, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Let's move on. As you know, there are some complicated stories out there. That's why it's fortunate we have with us today an expert on policy. I don't know about you, but I'm pretty excited to hear what he has to say. Would you please welcome
Todd Brad, policy analyst.
Thank you, Mark.
Welcome back, Mr. Brad. I trust you had a nice Thanksgiving. I sure did.
Oh, yeah. I love that turkey.
Yeah.
We all had lots of fun. Uh-huh. I sure did eat a lot, though, you know.
Yeah.
Too much stuffing, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Do it every year. You yeah. think I learned my lesson yeah. by now. I love that turkey day.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean, man. My big weakness, cranberry sauce. Can't get enough of it. You know what I mean? Cranberry sauce.
Yeah. I hear you, fella. Hey, don't talk to me about the cranberry sauce, all right?
Uh-huh.
How about the hot buttered roll?
Yeah.
I swear yeah. every year I gain another 10 pounds.
Love handles.
What?
Love handles. My wife calls them love handles.
Hey, love handles. How about turkey handles?
Yeah.
Because that's what I look like, a big, fat turkey.
You like Brussels sprouts?
Is there gravy involved?
2 hours later.
And that's how you roast acorn squash.
Wow, that's a great story, Todd.
Oh, yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
Terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's talk about the president's new immigration proposals. What exactly are we talking about here? Are Mr. Bush's proposals for stricter enforcement measures too little, too late, or just an empty public relations gesture?
Well, Mark, without getting into details, I think the point we have to remember is that this country is great because of immigration, not in spite of it.
Mm-hmm.
Our attitude towards those who come across our borders reflects a faith in the American ideal. We can't afford to let that faith waver.
Tremendous. Wow. Not only was that the most cogent piece of analysis I've ever heard, it was also the most inspiring. Once again, you cut right through the BS and presented this story in a fresh new way.
Thank you, Mark. Excuse me. Is there a baby in the studio?
I'm sorry, Todd. Kayla's wife ran out on him last night, so he's taking care of little Kayla.
Shut up!
Oh, my God. Not again. You just beat the baby. You just beat the baby, Todd.
My baby, little Kalo. You monster. And to think that I'm stuck here at the controls. Dave, go in there and help my baby.
I would, dude. But you know I'm not allowed to bring a beverage into the studio.
Mr. Brad, how can you present such calm, cogent analysis of immigration policy on the one hand and then pummel an innocent baby on the other?
Easy, Mark. I just don't let politics get to me. It's all about a little thing called anger management. Shut up!
Oh, my God. We've all heard that term bandied about, anger management. What exactly is anger management?
Glad you asked, Mark. You see, anger management commonly refers to a system of psychological, therapeutic exercises by which one with excessive or uncontrolled anger can control or reduce the effects of an emotional state. Basically, treatments are designed to be personal to the individual.
Wow, that's interesting. And then what treatment generally works for you?
This one.
Well, that makes sense to me.
Shut up!
Say, could you join us next week?
Hey, Mark, as long as there's policy to analyze and a baby to hit, you can count on me. Because I'm
Todd Brad, policy analyst.
Dudes, are we going to eat the baby now or what?
Todd Brad, policy analyst and eating babies, was brought to you by Amalgamated Bank. Amalgamated Bank, our fees are slightly lower than everybody else's.
Amalgamated Bank.
Wow, that was weird.
What was that?
What the hell was that, Jim? What the hell's wrong with you?
What do you mean? What do you mean?
I'm kidding, man.
The guy can't control his anger, and there's a baby in the studio.
Oh, okay. Now you cleared it up for me.
What on earth?
Yeah, where is that coming from, big man?
It's, you know, it's a lot of tension and anxiety happening now.
No, I like it. I thought it was great. So, Dave, this is a little Goliath who is playing little Goliath in most of the sketches these days. He's got a whole angle. You've got any pot angle. It is crazy, man.
Never thought that that would... You know,
that you'd have a career on radio?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we should get Jenna back on the phone. The two of you could co-host. She's all strung out on OxyContin with her knees up there, you know, in traction. I hope she's okay. So I could do a little news now, or we could just waste another minute and a half of radio time. What are you thinking?
Waste it with the news.
Yeah, that's a good idea. But wait, I want to ask Barry Lank a question. Barry, you know, a lot of people don't know you. You know, you're fairly, you know, like Jim, everyone knows.
Yeah.
But Barry Lank, a lot of people don't realize Barry Lank is the Afstra shop steward here at Air America Radio.
That's
he's
great.
A union guy.
Uh-huh.
And I get an email from you occasionally saying, is anybody listening? Does anyone care they're in a union?
Afstra sent out a number of questionnaires, which nobody has returned. And we're just curious whether you received them.
Now, how is the Afstra health plan? Is it pretty good?
It's about the same as the Air America's health plan. You'll also be in a pension plan.
Well, that's a positive thing you can say about both Afstra and Air America. At least you get a health plan, right, Jim? Can you say that?
Sure, for God knows how much longer.
Oh, Jim, actually, everybody knows how much longer for you.
It's exactly...
Wait a minute.
2.5
What?
14 days. And,
all right. We got Todd Barry coming up, and we got Recovery Corner, so stay with us. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. American Association of Retired Persons is opposing President Bush's plans for Social Security. Why would they do that? If you want to know the truth about old people, talk to the people who know them.
Old people are needy. I need a ride. I need a walker. I need something to eat. Could somebody please help me? I'm in the toilet. I can't get out. It's horrendous.
I had to spend 15 minutes helping my mother find her glasses because she forgot where she put them. Just forgot.
Dude, they crap in their pants.
Enough about World War II. I get it. You were there.
I'm sorry, but if you're going to dinner at 4 o'clock, you really don't need more money.
You liberated Auschwitz. You were there. I understand. Can we watch The Apprentice now?
And when they wear those diapers, they can pee right on themselves, too. Just pee.
Brian! My name is Brian! God!
I remember this one time, my uncle, he was on the floor. I thought he was having a heart attack or he's dead or something. Turns out he wasn't. Just on the floor.
Who the hell is Bobby? Nobody knows Bobby!
Dude, they crap their pants.
Old people. They oppose President Bush's plans for Social Security. Isn't it time they died already? Paid for by Swift Boat Veterans for whatever cause is being funded by the right-wing millionaires at the moment.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
There you go, 35 past the hour. That was a classic. That was funny. I hadn't heard that in a while. People are requesting some great old bits, and I'm very happy to hear them again. You forget in this hour, you're in sort of this waking consciousness where I sometimes don't realize that we've done what? How many shows? How many shows have we done? I know there's 13 left, but we must have done, at least three. Well, how many?
We've been out for 20 months, and
so do the math, right?
About 20 shows a month. So
wow.
Close to 400.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. I don't remember any of them.
It's also funny that you don't remember what is funny and what's not funny.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you didn't remember. You were just laughing hysterically at that bit, but we, you know, we played that a lot, and, you know, reaction wasn't always, you know, something that would make you laugh hysterically, unlike, you know, Todd Brad, policy analyst.
Right,
which,
right.
You know, we must have thought that was funny when we put it on.
It was, wasn't it? Come on, it was funny. I did, just some of the timing in that particular ad was just so good. Your timing on
dude, they crapped their pants.
and Larson's was really good, too. Just lost them.
Yeah, that was that was well done.
An inspired ad lib
on Larson's part.
Dan was great too.
Yeah, wow, we're just great.
You know, we'll be doing
so great.
We'll be
canceling this show. We're great.
We'll be doing more of this reminiscing later today when we record the DVD commentary of Air America's Left of the Dial documentary.
I'm involved in the one that's actually going to be sold to people.
Right, but we're going to put this one on our website.
Okay,
so it's the bootleg.
So it's
going to
be me, you, and Kalo and Pashman.
Yeah, maybe we'll have the guys who've been here too. Like you know, if Kent and Jim are hanging around, they can chime in.
We'll have Gilman come in.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone hanging around.
I'm going to curse so much.
Oh, good for you. Wouldn't that be relieving? We're going to satellite. Let's curse on satellite. All right, look. Tonight we get to watch George Bush pitch the war to the. That's today. I'm sorry. I keep saying tonight because of my hours. Today. Why don't I write it down right? How would that be? Put it on the paper. It's a different spelling altogether from tonight. Today is. All right. Today we get to watch a bitch. Could I say that?
Sure.
Bush. That's Bush. Pitch of the war. Because I got Bush and Pitch together. I got Bush. And they just kind of amalgamated because of the amalgamated bank thing. It's become some Joycean freak show here. All right. All right, look, he's going to give a speech tonight at the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, and he's going to try and... It's today. Today. Today the bitch talks. All right? That's all I'm saying. President Bitch is going to talk on a boat. Hey, you got it. All right? There you go. President George W. Bitch will be pitching some BS on a boat at to naval people. God, it's time for Recovery Corner. Hello, my name is Mark, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
And in Recovery Corner, I reach out to fellow 12-steppers who are struggling to stay clean and sober. As always, I'm offering my counsel to my temporary sponsor, George W. All right, George, look, it's been a while since we've talked, George W. Maybe we should take inventory and see how the George W. I can do it all by myself plan for world domination is working out. Okay, ready? Let's see how George's will has worked. Your war in Iraq? Quagmire. Total failure. A shameful screw-up for all time. Your approval ratings? In the toilet would be higher than where your numbers are now. Your inner circle? Under investigation, under indictment, or in a bunker. Your image abroad? The rest of the world hates you even more than we do at home. And make no mistake, W, Americans hate you a lot. People, places, and things, George. W no longer stands for winner, does it? It stands for withdrawn, worn out, withered, whipped. And how about wet, my friend? Because everyone knows you're back on the sauce. How about a wino, woozy, washout? Here's another W. Why? Why? Do you see the dark, lonely place just below your feet, George? It's a place called bottom, George W., and you're about to hit it. Head first. The wheels have come off the mountain bike, and now you got dirt up your nose, and I see a little white stuff, too. Clearly, your way isn't working, my friend. You need to get powerless and surrender. You need to fall to your knees and say, I'm an alcoholic, and I need help. Help me. If you prioritize your sobriety for a change, things will fall into place for you. Or you'll be impeached and thrown out of office in shame. And that's okay, too, man, as long as you're sober. You get how it works. First things first, right? Do the next right thing. And remember, keep the plug in the jug. There's no chemical solution to a spiritual problem. Bend your knees before you bend your elbow. Sorrow is looking back. Worry is looking around. You received without cost. Now give without charge. If you got one foot in yesterday and one foot in tomorrow, you're peeing on today. Okay, President Bitch? God doesn't wake up and think he's you. Think. That. Get to a meeting. How do you like that? Where are we? What's going on? You know, Rick Overton's going to be here, and he's a very, very funny man. I'm excited to talk to him. I'm going to have a conversation with him about... He's always been this guy. He's a comic friend of mine. You'll recognize him from movies if you were able to watch what we're doing here, which you're not. But I will tell you some of the movies. I think the biggest role he's had lately was in that North Fork movie. Was that what it was called? That interesting movie called North Fork. Yeah, he was in that. He was also in Groundhog Day. He was one of the doofuses in Groundhog Day. But I'm looking at his IMDb page, and man, he's been in everything. But he's going to be here, and his whole angle is, he's always said to me, Marin, you can't alienate people. You got to reach out to the moderate Republicans. You got to let them, they're going to feel marginalized eventually. They're going to feel disappointment, disillusioned, and we got to invite them in. And at some level, I understand them, because now, I think at the time, at the beginning of Air America, I could only hope that they would be falling apart as much as they are now. And I didn't even think it was possible that they would break apart like they are now. And
that there would be so many disenfranchised moderate Republicans who are ultimately disappointed and feel used and abused by this particular administration. And now I'm looking forward to talking to Rick about those possibilities and maybe some funny stuff. The other thing I was interested in, a recent Russell Research poll. I like the way I say that, Russell Research poll, because what the hell is a Russell Research poll? You just sort of cite these things from articles you read. Like, that matters. Like, people are going to go, oh, the Russell Research polls. That's a good one. This one shows that people would rather parent their children when it comes to TV than allow the government to make all television good for children, which is something I've always been against. I cannot tell you. And some people accuse me of being childish, but that's just silly. It's stupid, dum-dums. But I've always hated the fact that they try to lower the standard so everything becomes childlike and child appealing to children. So, parents can go to the movies with their kids and they can watch TV with their kids and they can do everything with their kids. But you surrender your adulthood because of it. 80% of American TV watchers worry about the kind of programs their kids watch. Okay. 91% said that parental involvement is the best way to keep kids from seeing stuff they shouldn't. All right. 9% said the government should increase control and enforcement of network television. So this is an argument that can be made against people like Brent Bozell, like Parents Research Council, like all those idiots who come down on television for sexuality and insist that the government must do something to regulate it. Now, it's just ridiculous because parents understand there needs to be adult content. There needs to be something they can watch by themselves. There needs to be something grown up on there because it would drive them crazy. I mean, how much kid stuff can you take? 85% of parents find TV ratings useful. 66% find cable blocking technology useful. 57% find satellite blocking technology useful. And 56% find the V-chip to be useful. So people are actually using some of these technological elements that allow them to filter television that they don't want their kids to see. But they're still parenting. They don't need to rely, on government regulation of poo, of boobs, or of talk they think is dangerous to kids. Federal law bars radio stations and over-the-air TV outlets from airing references to sexual and excretory functions from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Man, we're in a poopload of trouble then, aren't we? No? At what point, where do you draw the line? When children may be tuning in. So a lot of people listen to our show with their kids on their way to work. And I got to be honest with you. When you say poop a couple times, maybe the grown-up people are like, this is adolescent. But I guarantee you that 6-year-old's going to be laughing. Because listen, poopy, poop, poop. Right now there's a child laughing and the parent is having a great moment on the way to school. And some people are going, what is this? Why don't they talk about the issues? We're fighting for our lives here. All right. The rules do not apply to cable and satellite channels, obviously. And also, as Mark Riley, my partner, has always said, these fines that the FCC do, it's a racket, man. It is a racket. They make a fortune. Congress has considered legislation that would increase the fines for indecent broadcast to $500,000 per incident from the current $32,500, which is pretty high. And that would mean that they don't even, they used to have a thing where they'd give you one slap on the wrist and then fine you, but they're trying to pull that away. This is, as defined by the FCC, material is indecent if it, quote, in context, depicts or describes sexual or excretory activities or organs in a patently offensive manner as measured by contemporary community standards for the broadcast medium. You know what that means? Nothing. Doesn't even make sense. What are the community standards? What are they talking about? It's ridiculous. What's up, Brennan?
That's the key.
Yeah.
It's contemporary community standards. What does it mean? It can mean whatever they want it to mean.
So you got these people like Brent Bozell and the Parents Research Council who are trying to infiltrate community standards by, positing themselves on school boards.
All you have to do is have someone in that community to say this is offensive to our sensibilities. And that's why they have those mass mailings and website campaigns to get this stuff off TV.
Why are people so afraid of the poo? Why?
Funny, though. The poo is a big target. They've done research that says that the things that get attacked most and that the FCC goes after most vigorously is the poo.
Boobs and poo.
Poo more than boobs.
Wow.
And imagine if there's poo on the boobs.
Oh, man. We might get in trouble just for that. But we're examining things. It's not with prurient intent. It's 46 past the hour. We've got Angus McFarker is going to... Where's he? In Italy? Oh, that'll be good. And Rick Overton's going to be with us. Stay with us. 46 pass. I already said that's Morning Sedition.
Dateline, New York, the city we built on rock and roll. Hi, kids. This is your War on Brains correspondent, Mort Milpington, reminding you to always stay informed. And when you can't do that, try listening to Morning Sedition every morning here on Air America Radio, your Xanadu
Now with Splenda.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
All right, it's 51 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Mark Riley is on vacation until next Monday, hanging out, no doubt, listening to the show. He listens to the radio, that Mark Riley. How are you, Mark? I hope you're doing well. Hope you're having a good time while I'm at work. But it's not work when you have guests like my next guest. Our next guest will be appearing with Barry Crimmins at the first ever Laughing Liberally Lab tonight at the 45th Street Theater in Manhattan. Comedian Rick Overton joins us live in the studio this morning. How are you, Rick? It's nice to see you.
Good morning, Brother Mark.
Oh, here we go. We're already in character.
Don't I wish? That's what my mom used to say.
Really?
Honey, are you going to make that face every time? Why won't you be you? And I didn't have the vocabulary yet to say, Mom, this is me. I'm four, were... but this is me.
I swear
you just
me.
Don't get it yet.
Yeah, exactly. So, I the 45th Street Theater, that's a small black box theater, right? Is it a big theater? I can't remember. I know I've been there before. 45th Street Theater. Have you been there?
I haven't been there yet, so I don't know the capacity.
So it's going to be you and Crimmins and who else? Credico coming down?
Credico, hopefully.
Okay.
I see if Reno wants to come down.
Really?
And get some, and what we want to do is also just get the next batch of guys going.
Yeah. Is there a next batch of guys?
Not yet. That's why we're doing this.
Wait, what batch am I? Am I in the batch behind you, or are we in the
old
same batch?
Old school, baby. We're old school.
You're a little older schooler than me. A little bit. I was looking at your, you've been in like 900 movies, dude.
Yeah, I've been in a bunch of films. Just finished one with Billy Bob Thornton.
Really?
And, Virginia Madsen called Astronaut Farmer, and I'm coming out in Jim Carrey's Fun with Dick and Jane.
Really? Now, Fun with Dick and Jane is a remake, isn't it?
Yeah.
Of George Segal? Was it a George
Segal? And Jane Fonda.
Okay. All right.
That's right.
So let's talk politics. Please.
Okay.
You've always said to me, and you said it with a certain amount of urgency a while back, that I've got to not alienate the middle. I can't alienate the moderates. I cannot push away the people that we might have a shot at getting when the crap hits the fan. Well, it's hitting the fan, and I'm wondering how you're feeling now.
Well, I'm wondering how they're feeling now. I know how I'm feeling now. It's hitting the fan, and I want to know anyone that's undecided. They need a pal right now.
Mm-hmm.
They got to, it's like. For us, we've known for a few years. Some people are waking up like Neo in that tub of goo with tubes shooting out of their head going down the sluice. And so that's like a shudder for them. And they got nowhere to turn. Daddy went crazy at the breakfast table.
Yeah.
And they got no one to tell. That's how dysfunction works. You can't tell the neighborhood,
Yeah.
And so they need a pal right now. And to be the friend, well, that's what the hippies did the first round, was they were everyone's pal. Even after a beating, they were the pal. They were a friend more than they were hit, just, out there making...
Is that true? Is that true that most of the hippies were sort of like, dude, come on?
Yeah.
Because you are a little older than me, and I wasn't there at the forefront of the hippie thing.
When we were angry at a larger goal, but was regular people, even the ones that weren't sure. Yeah, when it turned into a fight, sometimes it turned into a fight.
But sure.
Then we would try. We'd have a talk about it going, the way to get them to jump is be their pal right now.
Peace.
Yeah, well, peace and stick to it.
Yeah.
Stick to what you're saying.
Okay.
And so we're... doesn't always work, but we do our best to stick to it, and then people would jump because they saw we meant it,
right,
and
right.
It looked like fun, and we looked like we meant it,
yeah,
and we were sticking to our word,
right.
And they eventually more people switched because of it, and everyone else who was kind of a follower just turned and followed that,
right,
and it was a mass abandonment because of it,
and not unlike today, the people that continue to believe in the delusionary system of extreme right wing goals. Are so deeply embedded. It's such a core belief system that there's no changing them. They will need to believe in that, and there's nothing you can do to stop that. Because if that was dissolved in them, if they were actually able to see the light or see the truth, their entire being would come shaking down. It would break apart.
It's too big. Yeah,
it's frightening to them. It's frightening. But you're saying that the people who are on the fence, who are decent people, who care about working people, and I do care about people, and I was only I would only fight you because I was coming from an extreme. Sort of radical, no, they ruined it.
I don't agree.
I know that.
But
I know
too much anger makes you them. Or
right.
me, them. I
right.
become them with it because that's the tool they use. Anger and hatred to manipulate all of our emotions. The rest of all our beliefs are loaded through the system of hate and anger.
Right.
That's their tool.
I'm so glad that my my hate and anger is tempered with guilt.
You know, because, no, I have it too.
I get a little reflection like that.
Oh, listen, you know, you remember the reputation of what I used to do, and like I used to scrap with the audiences and stuff like that. I'm just like, and I realize, oh, that's just the effect that created for me there. And then I realize that's the same effect everywhere. I can start to aim this. And you're better at expressing your views through that channel too. Uh-huh. And we need different soldiers doing different things. There's a guy who can speak angrily. Barry speaks angrily. I don't want to mess with it. It's like it's supposed to be like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I'm saying is, but no, okay, now I'm gonna pull another little turn here, and I'm gonna go off and scout this way.
Yeah.
While you're doing that.
Well, that is true. I had forgotten that because you know when you were, I remember the first few times I saw it was many years ago, and you did take on some sort of different disposition up there. You did come upon, it almost seems like a spiritual change, because not only do you not confront the audience, but you seem to float on a different plane these days, Rick. I mean, you have a spiritual ebullience to you that is almost disarming.
Well, I'm hoping
where'd that come from?
I'm hoping that the disarming thing keeps going, you know?
Yeah, that's
I want to create Disarmageddon.
Okay, that's good. That's a good goal. I'm with you on that. I wish I could open myself up as much as you sometimes.
You do.
Okay, man.
You're doing it right now.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm about to cry.
I love you, brother.
I love you, too. Will you hang out for a minute?
Give me an e-hug.
I will. 57 Past. I'm with Rick Overton. He's going to hang out. Stay with us. Todd Barry's coming, too. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Cats and kitties, it's 6 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm sitting here with Rick Overton. Were you a fan of Lord Buckley?
Oh, baby, he was the Naz.
Yes, he was.
Rick Overton is my guest. I hope you're having a good morning. Today is Wednesday. Is that right? It is Wednesday, isn't
Wednesday.
It?
Wednesday.
It's Wednesday.
Hump day.
Hey, hump day. That's right, Rick Overton. Now, a lot of people are wondering, who is Rick Overton? Not only is he a brilliant comedian, but he is an actor, and he's been in a million movies. Do you actually know how many movies he's been in? Take your time with that.
I might be above 80 now.
Wow. But the guys in the room were playing, who is Rick Overton? And
is everybody remembers him from different things. And they were popping up like they were just, you know, the synapses were connecting. And everyone was going, that's the guy from Willow. He was the little pixie in Willow.
You were?
I was one of the two little brownie guys. I got I recommended Kevin Pollak.
Oh, okay.
You got him in the part there. Yeah, I got him the gig.
That Kevin Pollak, that guy's had a pretty amazing career for an impressionist.
Had a little something to do with it.
Yeah, I mean he's a nice guy. He's a funny guy. He's a warm presence on screen. But when I knew him as a comic, he was an impressionist.
Yeah.
You never really saw the real Kevin Pollak.
There you go.
But what did you recognize him from, Kayla?
I recognized Rick from the movie Mrs. Doubtfire. He played the Major D.
He was the Major D in Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah.
Oh, see, now people at home are going, that guy, I remember that guy.
Yeah. I'm down to 3 finger snaps.
Oh, and little Goliath, did you recognize him from anything?
Yeah, I got to say, I remember Groundhog Day, drunk driving on
who
the
wants
train
flapjacks?
Tracks.
Yes,
yeah, of course.
Another Rick Overton moment.
And thank you.
Yeah, he was Rufus in the TV series Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
The Carlin part.
Oh. Okay, there you go. I
was the Drake in Seinfeld.
The Drake! Okay. I hate the Drake! I love the Drake!
Thank you!
And now, Rick, it says that you were on Lost. What were you doing on Lost?
A police psychologist for Michelle Rodriguez.
Oh,
that's
right.
Flashback this last week.
That was a great episode.
Rick is what we call a working actor, my friend.
We don't see a lot of them around here. It's mostly guys who have, like, one line in Cameron Crowe movies.
Hey, wait a minute. I could have had a future in that game. There's still time for me, right, Rick?
Look at that lustrous head of hair.
Yes, I can still do it.
Yes.
I'm going back to L.A.
Going back to L.A., baby.
Yeah.
Work days.
Yeah, but no, I'm not going to work. I'm going to work nights.
Working days on film, work nights on the radio. And
that would be great. What film am I going to be in?
It's my new film. We're shooting it out in Chatsworth.
Okay. Is there any pay? Do I get paid?
Well, payment in the experience. It's porn. We're doing porn. So it's kind of it's a great story, anecdote, you know?
Well, it sounds like a great opportunity, but how do I tell my wife? Hey, man. So what's this new thing you got going, bro?
You're
writing a book?
I'm writing a book. I was the guy that told Provenza the joke.
Oh, you were?
I'm the one that told the aristocrats, you know, to him, and it's because Rod Sullivan told me.
Right, the joke he's referring to is the aristocrats. I was not asked to be in that film, but I don't have any grudge against that. But, nonetheless, Provenza came in here with that jackass, Penn Teller, who, you know, I tell you, man, that... Penn Jillette, he comes in, two times I've met that guy, and I know Provenza for years, you know, and I guess Jillette is one of those guys that just likes to put people off, that just really likes to, you know, make you uncomfortable or push his limit. I'm being perfectly polite to him, and he treats me like a radio guy.
What did he say?
He's just condescending, but that's just the way he is, right? And look, I'm sucking you into it. Come on, say something bad about your friend.
I don't know. He's a big guy. He likes to play rough. You
know, that was
that.
It. Maybe I was a little too open. See what happens sometimes? I'm sensitive. I'm vulnerable. I open my heart. I want to engage people in conversation. Bam! They see the opening. Take a little smack at the little beater. You know what I'm saying?
Did I just take a smack at your beater?
No. Penn Jillette did. What do you got there in the computer? You got your iBook out. Now, what are we doing? Are we playing a game? What's happening?
Well, I was just... What I'm trying to do is look into why this happened to us, because this happened to us, but we let this happen.
The liberals, other big
the
thing, left.
Liberals and left kind of dropped the ball a little bit here, man. I think we need new progressive upgrade 10.1.
Okay.
Now with a sense of humor.
Thank God again.
And a spam filter that cuts out micro issues when we're trying to stop a war that will end our species.
Good. Finally, the humor is back. We used to be the funniest people on the block. In the 70s, it was all about neurotic Jewish guilt and liberal comedy premises, First Amendment issues, drugs and sex.
Everyone was doing
stuff.
It. That's what we're trying to get back to, because everyone was doing it for a while, and then they all kind of dropped it in the Reagan 80s when they started making it look mass media bad to do it.
Right.
And some of us just weathered that storm like a buoy, just ding, ding, and rang and flopped over a lot. And
I was in high school trying to figure out whether I should wear a thin tie.
The neck.
Yeah, exactly.
Will this be my Sharona? Well, you're a different generation, Mark.
Yeah, I'm a little younger than you, old man.
Yes. Yes, young Padawan.
So what are you going to do with this 10.0? What have we got? Is it going to be a whole book? Are you putting together a sort of a syllabus or a primer for the new liberal?
I'm trying to get that in there by rewiring how some of us think. I'm a dyslexic and I'm ADD, but I think now looking at how bad the society that told me I was flawed is, I'm wondering if this hasn't been their problem the whole time.
I think that's true. I have a theory myself that they have pathologized liberalism. That's why, did you know that George H.W. Bush and Donald Rumsfeld were both CEOs of pharmaceutical companies? And if you're a liberal, you're sensitive, you're more vulnerable to stress, right. Anxiety,
yes.
Empathy.
You feel the pain of others.
Exactly.
As opposed to those who have just sort of battlefield shielded off.
Right,
yeah.
You must be sick if you feel the pain of others. That's
right, take an antidepressant.
Exactly.
How about I'm depressed when things are actually depressing?
Exactly, that's my point.
Side effects may include waking up all nude and bloody at a stranger's house. I think I'll just stay depressed.
Overton, it's great seeing you. I'm going to take this call from we have a foreign correspondent, but you can hang out. Is there anything else you want to say? Let's plug the gig again. Is it tonight?
It's tonight. 45th Street Theater.
With Rick Overton, Barry Crimmins, Credico will probably make it. I haven't seen Randy in years. I'd like to see him. How's he doing? Is he all right?
He's great.
Good.
Come on down.
All right. Last week in Italy, hundreds of thousands of workers filled the streets in a general strike to protest Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi's spending cuts in the proposed 2006 budget. And now, with more on the story, is Morning Sedition foreign correspondent Angus McFarker reporting from Rome. Hello, Angus. How are the conditions there right now?
Buongiorno, Mark.
Yes.
Oh, I had real hopes for this one. 80,000 people in the streets of the Eternal City, all furious at the government. I was gearing up for Gladiator, Spartacus, Caligula, a Roman orgy of maximum violence.
Yeah.
Kill Massimo Violencia. After this one, I expected my pee to be the color of a nice Chianti. agony.
I take it there was no violence in Angus?
Bloody eye ties. A nation of useless wankers. Here was a perfect opportunity to show those French lads how it's done with the violence. Maybe even tear down the Colosseum. Nothing. Niente. Hanging about in their soft-shouldered Armani jackets with their tudgers in their hands. What about taking Mussolini, eh? What about stabbing Julius Caesar, eh? That was violence. Bunch of wankers.
So, Angus, you're not drinking on the job, are you?
Oh, no, Angus is drinking on the job. What are you going to do, Mark? Can't cancel the program?
All right.
So you're the tough guy now, is it?
Hey, just be careful,
don't
okay? I know how you get. Just be careful.
Don't, hey, don't worry about me, tough guy. It's these anti wankers need to be worried. Or you, Roberto Benigni. Yeah, I'm talking to you, son. Chef Boyardee. I got a message for you. Ti prendo a calci in culo.
What'd you just say, man?
I just said I'm going to kick your ass, and I will too, and your monkey organ grinder.
Oh, boy. Oh, you got to stop that, Angus. Come on.
Okay, here's another one for you, victim.
Oh, boy.
La sua mamma è come una bicicletta, tu ti prendi un giro.
What is that?
Your mother is a bicycle, and everyone gets a turn.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that did it. Come on, pizza man. Oi, oi, oi.
Here we go.
Hey,
come on, Angus. Angus.
Italian's a beautiful language.
Yeah, I can tell.
You should learn it there.
Angus. Come on, not again. What is it?
Go on. Kick me in the balls again, pizza man. Come on, harder. Go.
Angus. All right. He has problems. You know, he goes places where there is a social unrest, and if there isn't a fight,
He creates social unrest so he can report it.
Do you know Todd Barry?
No, Todd Barry's genius.
He is. He's going to be here in a minute, and you will be going.
It was good to see you, man.
Tonight he will be at the 45th Street Theater with Barry Crimmins and Randy Credico. There's a title for it. It is called Laughing
Liberally.
Laughing liberally. Thanks, Rick Overton. Great to see you.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, we'll be back with Todd Barry, 15 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hi, this is Congressman Gerald Nadler from New York's 8th District, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
Celebrate the one-year anniversary of Air America Radio. We're pleased to present another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
That's the sound of our brand-new facsimile machine with the document from the Fonda compound, bringing us our marching orders for today, August 19th, 1984. Write these down, people. One, hold fundraiser for Mondale Ferraro campaign. Come on, we got to try. Two, protest new movie Ghostbusters for being offensive to the recently deceased.
Oh.
Three, support the Contras. Buy an extra kilo of Coke for the week. Is that going to be enough? Will that hold you, Riley? Come on. Four, out, trickle-down economics. In, Purple Rain.
Whoa.
Purple Rain. I love that guy. Prince. Five, today's phrase, drop this into conversation. Oh, sure, it's morning in America, but Reagan swept through the alarm. Wake up, sheeple. We're headed for permanent midnight, and Bonzo's hitting the snooze button.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Ouch, buddy. 21 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. That was a bit we did on... That was a time travel bit. It was our one-year anniversary, and we pretended like we'd been around for many years, and we did a bunch of bits that were like that. What are you looking at, Brendan? What's going on? What are you thinking?
I'm so excited that Todd Barry's coming.
Todd Barry! Ouch! Apologize. I've known Todd Barry forever, and we've had him on before, and he was very funny the last time he was on. I got to be honest. We had him on, and we have I actually want to play a piece from Todd Barry on our show the last time he's here.
There was a club in Grand Forks, North Dakota. I don't know if you ever did that club.
No, I haven't.
And you know the way any time a comedy club opens up, it's always 5 nights a week, no matter what city it is.
Yeah.
Grand Forks was a 5-night week. But we sat there, and the guy, this is a true story, I did radio, and he goes, hey, the first 5 callers can get to see Todd Barry at this club. And we sat there, and we didn't even get 5 calls for free tickets. And I was like embarrassed. I go, oh, the guy's like, oh, it happens all the time. Like, maybe you should scale that number down. I mean, you control that. It's like, you control that. Why don't you go for like 1 pair and see if we get that?
So that was Todd the last time he was on. And the thing was, is that to help him out, I solicited calls because I figured we got a national radio show, and we get calls all the time. So I just put it out there to Air America listeners to give a call just to say hello to Todd Barry, and this is what happened.
I just saw Dan Pashman pick up the phone, man. This call might be
here. Oh, there's another call for Todd Barry.
We're on a roll now.
Let's take our sympathy call right now. First sympathy call.
We're looking for the third caller. Looks like we've got Mike in Staten Island.
Oh, God.
What's up, Mike?
Hey, what do you got going, Mike?
How you doing?
All right.
Just driving in the rain.
You know, they have a ferry, I think. They have a ferry. They have a little boat.
He's just driving. Did you want to talk to Todd?
He doesn't want to.
Not really.
Somebody wanted. Nobody else did, so I thought.
Wow.
Shaolin, baby.
He's pretty cocky for a guy from Staten Island. Uh-oh. Sorry, Mike.
Kayla's in from that.
Yeah, he's from Staten Island.
Are you really?
Mike, where are you going?
There goes your microphone.
Where are you going, man? Mike?
Huh? Everybody talked at once. What?
Oh, I'm sorry. Where are you headed?
Brooklyn.
Yeah? And what are you going to do over there?
Yeah.
I'm going to deliver 7,000 gallons of candle wax.
Whoa.
Really?
Really?
For what?
Candles.
Mark asked the probing, non-obvious questions. What are you going to do with that candle wax? Make candles with it.
You never know.
I know.
Yeah, right?
All right.
It's liquefied, though? Now I'm curious. It's liquefied candle wax?
Yep. Heat it up till it melts, put it in the tank, and haul it that way.
Wow. Do you make this on your own? Is this your company, the candle wax company?
No, I just drive the truck.
Oh, yeah. So you weren't the guy with the brains behind the operation.
Well, I mean, that's disputable, but...
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate
Thanks, Mike.
It.
I guess it's better to just have the calls come organically rather than like...
Is that a real call?
Yeah,
I think it was real. If it wasn't, it was very creative. The candle...
Uh-oh. Staten Island rolling in again.
Oh, I insulted Staten Island.
Tim in Staten Island, how are you, Tim?
Sorry, Tim. I apologize.
How are you? Tim, what's going on?
I'm all right. I just felt bad for Todd.
Oh, this is not a good precedent, I think.
Wow.
There's got to be a more clever way to get calls without saying, I'm not getting any calls. I'm not getting any calls.
Thanks for helping out, Tim. All right, buddy.
All right, Tim.
Wait, we got Bonzo in Milwaukee. How can that be bad?
It's starting off bad.
Bonzo, what's going on?
I was just wondering, what do I win for calling up to talk to Todd?
You win the conversation and the story you're going to tell. Where are you going?
Where am I going?
Are you in your car also?
No, I'm not going nowhere.
No.
I'm not going nowhere.
Bonzo stays home.
Oh, boy. Todd is going to come out here in a minute, and we might as well start... Stacking calls now, 866-303-2270 if you want to talk to Todd Barry. If you don't know who Todd Barry is, you can go to toddbarry.com. Is that what it is, Crimmings? Boy Genius, is it toddbarry.com? To remind yourself, because Todd's appeared on Letterman several times. He's been on Conan O'Brien. You've known him. He's made some appearances in movies, on television shows. Him and I were in a film that Mitch Hedberg made years ago. And people keep trying to get hold of a copy of that film, that Los Enchiladas. Mitch Hedberg is a comedian that passed away a few months ago, both Todd and I were in this movie that apparently is not available, and I have a copy of it. Someone should make it available for Mitch Hedberg fans, because there are so many of them, diehard Mitch Hedberg fans out there that look for the movie. I'd show it to you, but I got to keep hold of my copy, and it'd be wrong for me to offer it to anybody, because somebody else should be doing that. But Todd was in that movie. He's also been the voice on several cartoons that you might know. But if you want to talk to Todd Barry, 866-303-2270 is the number. He'll be out here in a second. This is an interesting thing. Do I have time to talk about this? In a recent study, participants, both men and women, watched videos of businesswomen discussing their hobbies and backgrounds. The women in the videos played either a receptionist or a managerial type. In one video, she wore flat shoes, slacks, and a turtleneck, like professional attire. In the other, she wore high heels, a tight skirt, and a low-cut blouse. Not so professional for the offer. But it was interesting because the participants rated the women on competence, and the ones who dressed trashy were okay as receptionists. But if they dressed sexy as managers or in a position of power, they decided they were incompetent. Whereas to me, it would mean that they were doubly competent. Isn't that right? Todd Barry in a second. 27 past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
We'll be right back.
James Griffin, co-founder of the band Bread.
Oh.
This week, the music world received word that James Griffin, founding member of the soft rock group Bread, is toast. In a statement released today to hopeful fans, Griffin's manager said there was no truth to the rumor he's risen. But I guess that news is pretty stale by now.
Oh, no.
Oh, got something in my eyes. Who's chopping onions? Never one to loaf. Griffin helped form Bread in 1968. And after they released the hits Make It With You and Baby I'ma Want You, Bread was on a roll. Any way you sliced it, Bread was hot. There's a cop button over there. Bread made a lot of dough.
Oh, no.
Is there a cat in here? Griffin had been in good health until last week when doctors labeled his condition as crummy.
Oh, no.
When loved ones discovered his body, witnesses say the former lead singer of Bread was crusty.
Oh, no.
Completely riddled with fungus.
Oh, man.
Nothing could be saved. Not even the heels.
Oh.
You bring a ficus plant here?
No, man.
And Mark, you know, I'm real sensitive about the pollen stuff. One more paragraph.
Okay, buddy.
Griffin requested his body be interned at the family cemetery, sandwiched in between two graves. Evergreens, flowering plants are very sensitive. A lot of suspended particulates in the air this season, right, Mark?
Yeah, I don't know. It's winter, man.
Yeah.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
36 past the hour. We're playing the hits here on Morning Sedition. I think that was the first one. Wasn't that not the first Mortensen Morning Remembrance?
It was the first real one. I think he had done one earlier, and then he kind of fine-tuned it with that one. And boy, did he fine-tune it.
That was a classic. That thing got so much momentum. People loved that one. That was hilarious. All right. Well, look, right now we got a good friend of mine here in the studio. Let's see what the intro says. Well, we'll talk about that. So you've been on Conan O'Brien, you've been on Letterman, you've been on a half-hour Comedy Central special. I was telling people that you were in that Mitch Hedberg movie.
Yeah.
Do people write to you and ask? Todd Barry's here.
Hey, everybody. Barry. Thank you. I'm the guy from the highlight reel, the guy who couldn't get calls earlier.
Exactly.
I'm back.
We've got calls, man. 866-303-2270. Calls for Todd Barry. Do people write to you to see if they can get hold of Los Angeles?
Yeah, they do. And some people sort of wrote
like
a half hour after I got the news about him.
It's like,
slow down before you.
Yeah, people
get the eBay business going.
It was a very sad thing, but
yeah.
I don't know why you didn't make that available, because I know the CDs are available, but people have been asking me about Los Enchiladas for years. But there's actually a guy on the line who's asking about it, but we'll get him in a minute, and we'll get some Todd Barry calls in a minute. So you're in the New York Times Magazine last Sunday. You're in the New Humor supplement, and because I don't see you as much as I used to, like every day.
I know, right?
Remember we used to walk around the East Village wondering if anything was ever going to happen?
I know.
Thank God things did.
I know. Look what happened.
Yeah, here we are.
You're going to bed at 8 o'clock at night.
I'm going to bed at 8 o'clock at night. And you're doing your second.
And I've risen to the point where no one wants to talk to me when I do a radio show.
There's actually a half a thing there.
Half a thing?
Well, it's not filled up.
I don't know the radio lingo. What's half a thing?
Half a thing in radio lingo means that we've only got half of the calls that could fill up with calls.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm saying
that's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad at this time in the morning. So I not heard the story. That's what I was saying. I had to read it in New York Times Magazine about some problem you had on an airplane.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
this was in the November 20th New York Times Magazine.
If you're wondering,
not just the paper, the magazine,
uh-huh.
The part you save forever.
Yeah.
I bet it was it's in the True Life Tales in the funny business section or the funny page. I was on a flight and I got bumped up to first class because I have a lot of miles, and I sat down and there was a syringe.
Oh my God!
In my seat pocket.
Not in a bag or anything.
Just a syringe sort of jutting out from the seat pocket. So I had this moral dilemma: on time departure or someone gets hurt later. And I can't believe I actually chose reporting it. But there was a guy next to me.
What happened?
Well, there was a guy next to me because I guess there wasn't a typical scenario on the flight. So there's a bit of confusion as to like the flight attendants were like, do we get rubber gloves? Do we get rubber gloves? And then there was this guy next to me who was just sort of clearly would not have reported it.
Right.
And he's trying to say things to, like, you know, it could be a diabetic. Really? I didn't think of that.
Of course.
I forgot about diabetes. Yeah. Let's just assume. And then he said, you know, we use a syringe to feed our baby.
Yeah.
It's like, well, first of all, that's weird. And second of all, what are we supposed to do? Hey, it must be just a guy who feeds his baby with a syringe. Let's forget about it. Let's think of best case scenario in this.
Yeah.
Let's get this plane in the air.
Yeah.
But it basically ended with, like three different sets of security people and a guy essentially coming over there with moist towelettes. He kind of plucked the thing out with his hand, bare hand, then just took like a wash and dry and wiped down the area.
So you get on the plane. Was it a stopover for other people? Why the hell was there a syringe here? And was there a needle on the syringe?
Well, ultimately, I don't want to ruin the ending, but there was no needle. But
you ruined the ending. It was last week's paper. It's garbage now.
It is garbage. You call garbage something I have in a gold frame. I don't know what kind of garbage can you have, but I have a gold frame as people walk into my building.
But the
pilot came over and actually was talking to this guy, and the guy brings up, you know, we use a baby, we feed our baby, and the guy's, yeah, and then the guy's weak. And, you know, it could be a diabetic. And the pilot said, it could be a diabetic with AIDS. It's like, whoa. Shut the guy down. It was sort of beautiful. It was like, the pilot, he said it just like, it was almost like a caricature of a pilot. It's like, it could be a diabetic with AIDS.
Oh,
all right.
I guess we still want to talk to him about your baby?
Did it have a needle on it?
No needle.
Oh, all right.
But I thought, you know, and then the guy, the pilot comes over in the middle of the flight, which I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know the pilot could leave the cockpit.
Don't you ever heard of autopilot?
I know, but you don't want to think about autopilot. I don't even use cruise control when in a rental car. I'm like, oh, this guy. The autopilot. But he comes over, he's like, do you have a business card? I'm like, huh? I don't have business. You might want to write down your address. And I was like, all right, he's going to give me the hookup.
Yeah,
I thought I was going to get like, you know, I've been on planes where they forget to give you a meal and they give you like an $80 voucher. And they gave me first class upgrades again. It's like, all right. I should get like a free vacation, don't you think?
Yeah.
For finding medical waste and being kind of...
And being a good sport about it?
Yeah, I didn't cause a scene. I just said, hey.
Yeah, you just reported it in the New York Times Magazine.
There's just medical waste. But if anyone works for Continental Airlines out there, you might want to make good on this. Was it wrong for me to name the airline? I guess it's too late.
No, don't worry about it. They're all going out of business. So was there a moment where that was wrong of me? I feel bad for the people that work at airlines that are going bankrupt and your pensions are being thrown away by the people that run those airlines. I wish you the best of luck, but I think there's only going to be one airline in the future, and that's JetBlue. Do you ever fly JetBlue?
JetBlue is good.
Yeah, it's good. You got the TV, and there's no class system. You don't have to resent people.
I sat next to the drummer for the Talking Heads on a JetBlue flight.
David Robinson?
No, Chris.
Chris France. David Robinson was actually the drummer for the Modern Lovers, which one of the Talking Heads was in it, the keyboard player, Jerry Harrison.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyways.
I know.
And you, too, were a drummer.
Yeah, I was.
Where can people pick up that CD?
Oh, God. If they break into my apartment, man.
What was the name of the band?
I was in a band called The Chant.
Oh, nice. So let's talk about, let's take one call, because you're going to stay for 2 seconds.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
You want to? All right, Fran in New Jersey. What's up, Fran?
Hello.
Yeah, hi. You got a question for Todd Barry?
Yes, I do. I have lots of questions for Todd Barry.
Oh, that concerns me.
I want to know how old Todd Barry is.
I'm,
be honest.
Are you an agent, Fran?
No, I'm not an agent.
Because I'm 22.
Really?
I'm 41.
Were you ever on Colin Quinn?
Yes, I was on that show.
I used to watch that show all the time, and it was my favorite show.
I was the guy who couldn't get a word in.
Yeah, I know. but it was naturally, it got taken off the air because it was fun to watch. But, because I wanted to know if you want to go out on a date with me.
Really?
And then we could film it, and then we could turn it into a TV show where it could be the first episode of a show where chicks date comedians.
Wow.
This is a pitch.
Really great.
This is a pitch.
Every week, a different comedian would go out with a chick and we'd film it, and then there would be a panel of comedians analyzing what went horribly wrong during the date.
Fran, can I be part of this? Am I part of this conversation, or am I just facilitating this?
Mark likes to go out with chicks also.
It would break my heart if you weren't all part of it, but isn't Mark married?
Yeah, I am. I am, but I
you could be part of the panel.
Can I be the creepy comic watching the date?
I hope you could, but you're not creepy. You're nice.
I know, but I have a creepy part of me.
And
he does.
The rest of the panel would be... We could invite Judy Gold and Lisa Lampanelli, and they could all be part of the panel.
What, just to laugh at the man?
No. The guys are cute. There are all these chicks in New York that want dates with funny people.
Yeah.
My friend Debbie and I want to come up with this show where people just date comedians.
Oh, my God.
But I don't really know any, and so this was my big chance. They said, call and talk to Todd Barry. And I thought, well, he's a comedian. Let's see how old he is and if he's single and if he wants to go.
Why, what is my age?
That.
Did what? You think I wasn't, like, old enough to be on TV or something? What if I was 75 years old? Why?
Well, hey, that Fran. Would be okay. Then you could be in the fire club.
But, Fran, in the future, though, if you have a TV idea, it's probably not a good idea to announce it on a national radio show. It's already being dictated into a...
But, Fran, I gotta tell you something. I think you ought to do a little homework, and I think before you throw this right onto television, you should probably date a couple of comics. Because I know you want to date funny people, but I really think you should probably try to date a couple of comics and see how funny that is for you.
Especially comics on dates.
That would be the morbid humor of the show.
Morbid? You'd also have to run it on cable, depending on which comic and what happens afterwards. I mean, I'm just speaking for...
Todd, I think you're wrong.
Oh. That was Mark, by the way.
That's right.
Oh, Mark, I'm sorry.
Just all
okay, it's radio. I can't hear you talking. No, listen, first of all, every chick in New York City that would go on this show has already dated museums, which means that
museums?
No hope and no expectations.
Musicians,
for good
I mean. No, musicians. Dated well, museums. Yeah, I knew a woman who went out with the Natural History Museum. Magicians. I'm sorry. Don't get offended, Fran. I understand. Musicians are a different breed, but they're similar. I don't think that comics require the same care.
I guess, long story short, no, I won't go out with you, Fran.
All right, Fran.
Okay.
So,
no, I don't want to be televised. It's the TV thing.
Okay.
Now you hurt her feelings.
I was just kidding, Fran. No, it is a funny idea for a show. It could be funny.
Last
comic dating. Let's call it that.
Call Russ Maniz.
Would you be on our show?
Sure.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be on the show. I'll be on the show. It's Mark Maron. Just we got.
If Mark and I could do a double date,
this is going on so long. I've just lost half of the audience. Let's carry this on the break, and we'll come back with Todd in a minute. 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
And you.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
All right, it's 51 past the hour. We're going to put the craft down, my friends. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. Mark Riley is out till Monday. We're talking with Todd Barry. Todd Barry is taping his second Comedy Central Presents on December 16th. Write that on your calendars, girls. December 16th in New York City. For free tickets, go to www.toddbarry.com. That's TODDBARRY. Or call 888-258-0661. I hope that...
that's my home phone number.
Man. So I hope that... it'll be good. Where are they doing these ones? I wanted to do one. I wanted to do another half hour. My first half hour, I did like the very first ones, and it was in L.A. It was at I can't even remember the theater, but they literally bust in like two busloads of Samoan teenagers as my audience. And I'm not judging Samoan people. I'm not, but it's odd. It was odd.
They did their research.
Yeah, they knew exactly. Who does Maron appeal to? Let's get the Samoan teenagers in here. Apparently, there's a Samoan community outside of Los Angeles. It was a very strange experience. Where are they taping these ones?
These are at the Hudson Theater.
Oh, that's where they did the last one?
Yeah, they've been doing them there.
I really want to do it. Have you gone over? When I did it, I literally had to over-prepare. They were so paranoid about commercial breaks that I literally broke down the entire half hour into segments that would fit around commercials.
Yeah, that's what they do. They have you sort of...
drove me nuts.
But then they want extra material, so they want, you got to do it this long, but there's got to be more than that.
And
they wouldn't let me... should I talk about that?
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to do a joke about anal sex, and they said I couldn't say. Yeah, they go, we always bleep anal.
Yeah.
They have a policy of bleeping anal.
So that would ruin the joke, because it could be anything. Could be monkey.
Well, if you just heard.
Could be meatloaf.
It could be meatloaf. But they actually said I could say back door, which would be like, oh, that's not a.
But that's like so. That's right, like provincial and kind of rubish.
Right. You
know? I'm going in the back door.
Exactly.
You know, like, you know, Tom Barry.
Just say, I can't do the joke. Don't tell me. Give me a substitute. But like, and someone's going to be like, there's going to be someone who wouldn't be offended by backdoor, but would be offended by anal.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because you
it's
watch
a clinical term.
Anal is a clinical term. Makes people uncomfortable.
I mean, depending on which clinic you go to, I guess.
Exactly. So, where are you going to be on the road at all? What are you doing? What's going on? Where are you going? Anything?
This Friday, I'm at the Mohegan Sun Casino.
That's a good gig.
Yeah, it is. I don't know how to get there, though.
You don't? You go, it's like, it, literally, you drive, I don't remember what highway it is, but when you see it, it's like, oh my God, it's yeah. Like this weird, huge tower, shining tower.
I did it once before, and it's kind of cool, because you're like, the first show, Roberta Flack, second show, Todd Barry.
And people show up, it's like a late show, and maybe people will go, the last time I was there, I got a fairly sad turnout, and I just started doing this show. So like four people, they don't get this in Connecticut. I don't think they don't get it on the reservation. but a few people made the pilgrimage. So it was literally like seven people that listened to me on the radio every day and really know me, and then like four people that didn't.
Right.
And it was, you do two shows though, no?
No, it's just one.
It's not two nights?
No, I'm only doing one night.
Ah, because I feel like there was one good show and one bad show. But maybe I'm wrong. But
I have that even when I do one show.
It's a beautiful facility, man. And they,
I know, it's pretty sweet.
I lost like $800. It was the most I ever lost gambling. I felt awful. Awful.
Last time I was at a casino, I was at the Foxwoods, and they have a game. I couldn't believe it. It said a Casino War.
Yeah.
And it's really just the game War.
Oh, really? You play War cards?
The dealer pulls the card out, you have a higher card, you win. It's like, oh my God, that's the game?
Isn't that like the one you used to play when you were seven? Right. The only card game you knew how to play because it was simple enough to know when you were a kid?
Where's the Go Fish table?
Exactly. Anyways, why am I'm laughing heartily at all moments. People ask me, Todd, they go, who's your favorite comic? I go, Todd Barry's right up there.
Well, I heard you say that to Rick Overton.
Yeah.
A half hour ago, so. About him, though.
No, I did not.
Two comics on one morning show.
Yeah. So you worked with Overton on San Francisco recently?
Oh, yeah, we
recently?
Just did a show. We did this thing, Comedy Day,
in
Golden Gate Park, and it's wonderfully timed with the appearance of the Blue Angels. So it's an outdoor show where you're doing comedy. You're doing spoken word with, yeah. So I'd be like, hey, everybody. It's like, I was like, you know, I'd like to think I'm skilled, but when four jets fly over you in formation.
Did you treat him like a heckler?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was all about, hey, what line can I say when the planes come over?
And that was the whole theme of the day?
Yeah.
For everybody?
Just, yeah, I think the audience got it, and they were sort of
appreciative.
They weren't like, hey, man, I can't believe he's not killing while the jets are over.
All right, well, here's a few jokes. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. After returning from Iraq, Democratic Senator Joe Lieberman praised U.S. strategy there and urged President Bush to update the American people on progress being made. Lieberman, who spent Wednesday and Thursday in Iraq, said he saw strong evidence that a plan is in place. Unfortunately, that plan is to fool idiots like Lieberman whenever they're in Iraq on Wednesday and Thursday. I stumbled. The Vatican newspaper said yesterday that homosexuality destabilizes individuals and society. The Vatican newspaper says homosexuality could never match the importance of the relationship between a man and a woman, especially a 12-year-old man whose mother catches him with a copy of Hustler and forces him into the priesthood. A new study shows that people perceive a businesswoman in sexy attire as less competent, although the same clothes do not affect their opinion of a receptionist. Upon hearing of the study, marketers at Victoria's Secret put on hold plans for the crotchless power suit, boardroom bustier, and a line of high heels called Promote Me Pumps. Okay, nothing, huh? Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Nice to know Lieberman thinks we have a strategy in the war. Wake up, sheeple. Lieberman is Hebrew for Republican. Todd Barry, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, ToddBarry.com, ToddBarry.com for information about everything Todd.
Tomorrow.com,
it's .com. Tomorrow, Susan Jacoby, free thinker. She's great. Great guest. And Tim Robbins is going to hang out for a while. We can play that game we did with Rick Overton with Tim. That'll be fun. 57 past. Have a good morning.
Sedition on Air America Radio.
You're here.